think we can begin now. I understand from the department that someone is still on the way to going to join them. I'm sure it will not affect us when we start now. Today, as per our agenda, we will be listening to the briefings from the department on Vote 33 on their corporate strategy 2010 to 2013. As our usual practice, I think, therefore, we can introduce ourselves because there may be some new people, especially from the department, who are here, who are not familiar with our members. So I think it is useful, therefore, to start by introducing ourselves to one another so that you can start the business of the day in the correct footing. I'm the chairperson of the Committee on Science and Technology from the African National Congress. Ngaba means miss, for those who do not understand. I'm a mysterious person. And then I've got my committee secretary, Shannas Isaacs. And then I'll go around this round the members to introduce themselves. And then the delegation decide they will introduce themselves. I would like everybody who is here to introduce him or herself so that you know who is here and who is not here. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Langalaki Mkhize from ANC.
My name is Marion Shin from the DA.
My name is Lunera Gunja from the ANC.
Sorry, I thought you called me ANC.
My name is Sanamola from the Congress of the People.
Good morning. I'm Poppy Muchumi, member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, deployed by the ANC to government. Thanks. And I'm from the province of Gauteng.
Peter Smith, IFP.
I think we no longer have members here. Yeah? So the delegation from the department must introduce themselves. Who leads the delegation? Who is leading the delegation?
I'm Derek Hanukom, the Deputy Minister of Science and Technology, and the delegation is headed by an acting Director General who will introduce himself and the team can introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair and Deputy Minister. My name is Thomas Ofterheide. I'm the Acting Director General and normally the Deputy Director General for International Cooperation and Resources. I'm leading the delegation today because our Director General, unfortunately, is not able to be here. He's accompanying the Minister to the African Ministers' Conference on Science and Technology, which is the key African science and technology political engagement. So he sends his apologies.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Malokolwane Malapane. I am the CFO, Department of Science and Technology.
Hi, good morning. My name is David Magola. I'm currently acting as a Chief Operating Officer, Science and Technology.
My name is Nomisa Honei. I work in the DG's office.
My name is Nandi Jinga. I'm also in the DG's office, Cape Town.
Loyal of France, PLO Ministry.
Martin Mulcahy, I'm Special Advisor to the Minister of Science and Technology.
I'm Renee Osborne Mullins, the Researcher for the Committee. Aziza Friedrich, Parliamentary Officer, CSIR.
Nurun Isamula, I'm from the DST and I manage the Office of the Deputy Minister.
I'm Caroline Kutzer from PMG, the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, Honourable Members. I'm Weyokazuma Filika, the Parliamentary Manager in the Office of the Auditor General.
Morning, Members. I'm Arutun Kwandla, Committee Assistant.
Thank you very much for the introduction. Without any waste of time, I think we can start as the presenter, can the first presenter can. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning once more, honourable members of the committee. I have the enviable task this morning, the enviable task of presenting to you the corporate strategy for the Department of Science and Technology. I say it's the enviable task because anybody in their right mind would want to be associated with this department, which is an efficient and effective department, and certainly is promoting a portfolio and a domain of activity that surely must be central to national development goals. Chair, this is a brief overview of the presentation. I'll talk briefly about the strategic context and provide a strategic overview and a brief overview of key policy developments. Then I would like to remind the honourable members of the DST's principal goals, talk about some recent outputs and achievements and some challenges that the department faces in its activities, then provide an outline of medium-term priorities and initiatives, and then giving more details on those by listing selected medium-term output targets. Chair, you had specifically requested also that the department provide some feedback on monitoring and evaluation activities, and we have some slides on this as well to give feedback to you and the committee. To present to the members the current status of the gross expenditure on research and development, which you will know is a key indicator and that is used to measure a nation's science and technology investments. A few slides about the budget, and then a list of the institutions that report to the department, and then that would be bring us to the end of this presentation. Chair. So just starting off with the strategic context, it's important, Chair, to emphasize this point that the corporate strategy explicitly aligns the medium-term strategic framework of government with the 10-year innovation plan of the department as well as the National Research and Development Strategy. These are the two key policy documents for the department published in 2002 and 2007 respectively. And these documents are aligned with the medium-term strategic framework, and the corporate strategy aligns, brings all three of these into alignment on a three-year and on an annual basis. The three particular aspects, strategic aspects, which are brought into alignment in these documents and in the corporate strategy are, first of all, the focus on the importance of technology innovation in speeding up economic growth and in creating decent work and sustainable livelihoods. Secondly, the emphasis on building on the current range of strategies and support programs already supporting innovation in firms and research and development in the private and public sectors, with a specific emphasis on biotechnology and pharmaceuticals, space science and technology, energy security, and other opportunities presented by climate change. And these, Chair and honourable members, are almost verbatim quotes from the MTSF, for example, as well as from the 10-year strategy. And then lastly, to emphasise South Africa's contribution in international cooperation to an improved South Africa, an improved Africa, and an improved world. So these are the three strategic priorities that are aligned in this range of documents. Just to remind the honourable members of the committee about the department's vision to create a prosperous society that derives enduring and equitable benefits from science and technology, and its mission is to develop, coordinate and manage a national system of innovation that will bring about maximum human capital, sustainable economic growth and improved quality of life for all. Honourable members will have seen these statements previously. The strategic context for the department's portfolio and for the work the department does is provided by the so-called Strategic Management Framework, which is a framework that was approved by Cabinet a few years ago. And in terms of this framework, science and technology activities are conceptualized as falling into one of three areas. The first area, the green block on the top left-hand side, are emerging areas of science and technology where the DST should take the lead. For example, areas of biotechnology, nanotechnology, space science, so these are the areas in which the department should be providing leadership and should be coordinating activities across the national system of innovation. Then there are sector-specific science and technology activities, such as, for example, in health or in agriculture, where there is a mix of fundamental and strategic and applied research, as well as the application of mature technologies. The latter being the third category of science and technology activities, which is the routine application of established science and technology capacities. And this is what is called mature areas. So the category in between the emerging research areas or emerging science and technology areas and the mature areas, the category in between, is an area where the primary responsibilities of the Department of Science and Technology and those of other line ministries overlaps to some extent, because there's an overlap in this middle section of primary and basic research, strategic research, applied research, as well as the application of mature technologies. The interface between these is not completely separated. So this is the strategic management framework, and I will be alluding later on to the complexities that the strategic management framework does present, and I'm sure the honourable members and the chair that you have already come across some of these issues. This chair is just a brief overview. The honourable members may have seen this slide or a version of this slide before. It's just to contextualise the contemporary policy environment for the department in its history. Just to remind the honourable members that it was in 1996 that the Science Technology White Paper was published. It was in 2002 that the R&D strategy was, the national R&D strategy was approved, and this sets up so-called science and technology missions in areas such as biotechnology, information communications technology, advanced manufacturing and astronomy. It was 2 years after that that the former Department of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology was split into its two current versions. And in 2007, the 10-year innovation plan was published. And in a sense, these two documents, the National Research and Development Strategy and the 10-year innovation plan, are complementary documents. The former looks at the upstream end of the innovation chain, making sure that the capacity to produce new knowledge is in place, while the latter then tries to extract value out of the research capacity of the nation and turning that into innovation, into new products and goods and services. And that is what the 10-year innovation plan essentially tries to do. So these two documents are complementary to each other. Of course, in 2007 as well, members of the committee may recall, the OECD undertook a review of the South African National System of Innovation, and in a sense that presented a benchmark of the department's, of the National System of Innovation against other national systems of innovation. And we have now started moving into implementing several of the 10-year innovation plan imperatives already. For example, the establishment of the Technology Innovation Agency has now been formalized. The South African National Space Agency will be called into life very shortly in an operational sense. The IPR Act has been promulgated. It still needs to be proclaimed. The National Intellectual Property Management Office is about to be established, and of course we have established two nanotech innovation centers and several biotechnology regional innovation centers, for example, and these are direct implementations of strategies and policies that were embedded in the 10-year innovation plan. So there is steady progress, Chair and Honorable Members, in the rolling out of the strategies developed by the Department of Science and Technology. This is just a schematic overview of the 10-year innovation plan, which is based on the ability to produce knowledge, on the knowledge infrastructure, which consists of the Science Council, state-owned enterprises, universities, as well as probably private research institutions and activities. Superimposed on this is another cross-cutting enabler, namely human capital, which is, of course, at the heart of our national endeavors to develop science and technology. The 10-year innovation plan has identified five key so-called grand challenges: farmer to pharma, the space science grand challenge, energy, climate change, human and social science. And these were identified in order to cluster at a high strategic level key areas that can contribute to and at the same time significantly promote national socioeconomic development. The DST's five principal goals are the following: to enhance South Africa's knowledge generation capacity in order to produce world-class research and turn advanced findings into innovative products and processes. Secondly, to develop the innovation capacity of the national system of innovation and thereby contribute to socioeconomic development. Thirdly, to develop appropriate science, technology, and innovation human capital to meet the needs of society. Fourthly, to build world-class science, technology, and innovation infrastructure to extend the frontiers of knowledge, train the next generation of researchers, and enable technology development and transfer, as well as knowledge exchange. And then lastly, to position South Africa as a strategic international research, development, and innovation partner and destination through the exchange of knowledge, capacity, and resources between South Africa and its regional and other international players, partners, thereby strengthening the national system of innovation. These are the five principal goals of the department. I would now like to highlight, Chair and Honourable Members, in a few slides, some key outputs and achievements of the department in the last while. First of all, to remind Honourable Members about the launch of the Sumbandila SAT in September last year. This was the high point of a long, drawn-out, complex relationship with Russia. The construction of seven dishes of the CAT-7, which is a meerkat precursor, was completed in January of this year. The launch of the South African HIV and AIDS Research and Innovation Platforms in July of last year. We have managed to establish 82 research chairs and supported 423 postgraduate students through grants. 204,000 people participated in the National Science Week program. An important milestone was the launching by Anglo Platinum of a 100 million rand platinum development fund to promote commercialization of platinum group metals and technologies in South Africa. Chair and Honorable Members, you will know that we're doing a lot of work in the area of fuel cells and battery production, for example. And this is driven by the logic that South Africa, as the repository of the vast majority of the world's known platinum resources, it makes complete sense for the country to develop technologies, products, and services that extract value out of this natural resource. And clearly, this is not something that the public sector on its own can do. This needs to be driven in close conjunction with the private sector, and here is tangible evidence of those public-private partnerships being established around an unassailable logic of developing South Africa's resource base. South Africa was elected vice president of the non-aligned movement Science and Technology Bureau for the next 4 years. It's just one example of several important international achievements that the department and the country have achieved. The department leveraged just under 200 million rand in the last year through official donor assistance to South African science and technology activities, and this does not include funds spent in other countries to promote access by South African researchers to their knowledge systems. The 10-year global change research plan was finalized and will be kick-started quite soon in several operational ways. And then we have undertaken and rolled out and established successfully several initiatives that are focusing on improving the quality of life, particularly of rural communities. Here is one example of this, Chair and honorable members, and it's an example involving the production of essential oils. These are oils that are extracted from plants and can be used for a range of different purposes, health and nutritional purposes. So the department, for example, established 5 rose geranium essential oil producing small and micro enterprises, and this oil is sold into the local market, which has got some international linkages. These projects all are associated with plantations of significant size, as well as steam distillation factories, and the sites are distributed across the Limpopo, the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Northern Cape. And all in all, 306 job opportunities have been established, and in our assessment, these are sustainable job opportunities because the projects are sustainable. Some further examples of outputs and achievements. This one is to share with the honorable members and the chair the rollout of rural broadband connectivity using a wireless mesh network that reached 150 schools in the Nkangala district municipality in Mpumalanga and parts of Sekukune district in Limpopo, and I'll talk a bit more about that just now. And then the establishment of a titanium center of competence is at an advanced stage as well. And here is some more information on the wireless mesh networks. These are essentially communications networks that are made up of radio nodes that are organized in a mesh. The important thing is that they don't require tall radio masts in the way that we might be familiar with cell phone masts. That as long as the houses or buildings that are to be connected via this wireless network, as long as they are within line of sight, this technology enables the establishment of these wireless networks. So it's a bit like having a wireless network in one's house or one's building, but it stretches across a community and goes into a number of different houses. We're piloting several important projects in this respect that focus not just on the provision of internet access to private dwellings. More importantly, it provides access to electronic communication and internet services in public sector buildings, like administration buildings and libraries. So this is, a very important technology that provides significant promise for development in peri-urban and rural areas in South Africa. The next achievement that we wanted to just highlight to the committee is the conceptualization of this titanium center of competence, and my colleague Marjorie Pius, who's the Deputy Director General for Socioeconomic Partnerships, who was able to join us now after having been delayed in Port Elizabeth. This is a project that she's been championing. The purpose of the slide, honorable members, is not to provide confusion with the level of detail, but to just give an overview of the extent of the center of competence, the wide range of institutions within South Africa that are involved in this center of competence and whose capacities are being aligned in order to maximize the work that we're doing and the ability of South Africa to produce globally competitive titanium-based products and services. There were some challenges, and there probably will be challenges in the future too, in the department's attempts to implement these key initiatives, some of which I've outlined, and to progress in our performance, key performance areas. The first one, of course, is the economic recession, which resulted in substantial reprioritization not only in South Africa and within the department, but also internationally. The effects of the financial constraints have certainly impacted on the department's ability to deliver on some of the plans that it had previously formulated. On the international front, there have already been a number of cases now where plans that had been developed between the department and its international partners, where those plans have been put on ice temporarily for lack of resources, largely in our international partners at this stage, not on the South African side. But there have already been some instances of that. Intergovernmental coordination, especially on initiatives that require interdepartmental cooperation. The cluster system, as the honorable members and the chair and the deputy minister knows, the cluster system is intended to and was intended to facilitate interdepartmental, intergovernmental coordination. We believe Cabinet has recognized there are improvements that can be made to that system, and we are under the impression that the question of interdepartmental and intergovernmental coordination is currently under review. And certainly there are opportunities to improve the interdepartmental coordination of science and technology activities, particularly in the context of the strategic management framework, which I alluded to and showed a slide on earlier on in this presentation, Chair. There are some important constraints in the synergy between various delivery calendars, and the specific example that I want to bring to your attention, Chair and Honourable Members, is the differentiation between the financial year according to which the Department of Science and Technology operates and the calendar year, which applies to academic operations and research operations within the public sector, in particular within the universities. This has led to a bit of a misalignment between the way in which the Department of Science and Technology transfers funds to the National Research Foundation, for example, and the timing of the allocation of those funds by the National Research Foundation to the university sector. So these two years, the financial year and the academic year, are not completely aligned, and that has created some constraints in the movement of funds from the department into the research institutions. And then lastly, the establishment of new institutions absorbs time and capacity in the Department of Science and Technology. So there is a fairly lengthy period in which the these new organizations are conceptualized and spawned within the department, and the department needs to, in an operational sense, engage with the establishment of these organizations, bringing in HR consultants to advise. So there's a point where the department there's a point where the department can hand over those responsibilities to the boards and councils of those new institutions, but it cannot do that on the first day those boards and councils are established. There's an ongoing need for a relationship between the department and those boards. And then the processes of establishing these institutions are not entirely predictable always. And so in as much as the department has been heavily involved in the establishment of the Technology Innovation Agency and the National Space Agency, for example, that has to some extent impacted perhaps on the way the department could have engaged with some strategic issues. Turning now to medium-term priorities and deliverables, so the previous slides, Chair and Honourable Members, have been an overview of the last year at a strategic level as well as at an operational level, with a brief indication of some of the challenges that the department has faced. Moving ahead now to look at these medium-term priorities and deliverables, it's important, Chair, for me to remind members of the committee of the second or third slide that I showed, in which I illustrated how the 10-year innovation plan, the national research development strategy, and the medium-term strategic framework are aligned with each other. And it's that alignment that gives rise then to these medium-term priorities and deliverables, which will look familiar, as they should, to the members of the committee, because we don't want to change medium-term priorities every year. So the first is the ongoing development of a strong innovation chain in biotechnology, in nanotechnology, in the hydrogen economy, space science and technology, ICT and advanced manufacturing. So these are some of the key areas that we're focusing on in the medium term. Development and application of technologies to address poverty and improve the quality of life of South Africans, and I outlined some examples in the overview of previous initiatives. Development of an innovative and diverse flux of young people seeking and finding careers in science and engineering, so it's the ongoing challenge of human capital. And then lastly, the accomplishment of successes in turning trends in global science to the national advantage, for example, in astronomy and space science. And of course, a key strategic imperative here is to secure the square kilometer array bid for South Africa, well, for Africa, but in the first instance for South Africa. I would like to now present some specific initiatives that would address these medium-term priorities and outline a few of the specific initiatives that we'll be taking. These will be then presented in a little more detail in some subsequent slides. So first of all, develop appropriate space technology platforms and promoting the use of space applications for socioeconomic benefits. This particular imperative is unpacked in the corporate strategy, Honourable Members, in some more details with specific targets and indicators that need to be achieved. Providing strategic direction towards the construction of the SKA demonstrator telescope, that's Meerkat, and other activities to ensure that South Africa is well positioned to host the square kilometer array. This is, of course, on the international front, a key imperative for South Africa. The operationalization of the Technology Innovation Agency, the National Intellectual Property Management Office, and the South African National Space Agency. And again, there are specific targets and indicators listed in the corporate strategy in respect of these of this imperative. Finalization and implementation of the science, engineering and technology human capital development strategy. This strategy is now at an advanced stage. The progress on this is perhaps not what we would have liked it to have been in the last few months, but we have now grappled with this in a very significant way, and I am certain that our new Deputy Director General for Human Capital and Knowledge Systems will be finalizing this strategy in the very, very near future. Of course, the ongoing implementation of the South African Research Chairs Initiative, again, as the Chair and the Honourable Members will know, the rollout of these chairs has been a little slower than had been originally planned for a range of different reasons, but we are coordinating this rollout now very closely with the National Research Foundation and looking at significant interventions in this regard as well. The continuing implementation of the Youth into Science strategy, for example, in the form of the National Science Week, and again within the corporate strategy, there are several specific indicators and targets relating to Youth into Science strategy, as well as the general popularization of science. Development of a 10-year strategic research infrastructure plan. This is a very important part of the department's focus currently, because we have reached a point where the research infrastructure of the nation needs a significant recapitalization. And clearly, the argument for recapitalization will be strengthened considerably if it's done in the context of a strategic plan that is rational and well-structured and well-argued. So this is an important imperative for the department at the moment. The systematization of sectoral and regional innovation systems. There is already extensive work happening on this particular imperative. And again, my colleague Marjorie Pius would be able to provide more details on this. We have made significant inroads in this challenge. And just to illustrate what is meant by this particular imperative to honorable members and to your chair, I would like to just illustrate this slide. It's possible that members have seen this slide before, I'm not quite sure. But essentially, this is a slide that our colleagues in Finland have allowed us to use. It is a slide that illustrates how Finland, on the basis of one of its core resources, which is wood plantations, forests, on the basis of this, developed an innovation system within the sector of paper and pulp and wood. So the diagonal arrow illustrates the basic component of this paper, pulp, and wood sector. And arranged around it are a range of science and technology and innovation opportunities and sectors or subsectors that have direct relationships with this basic focus on maximizing the benefit of this resource to Finland. And if we take, for example, information technology, in the top left-hand corner here, if you look at the relationship between information technology and forest industry, this particular sector, there's a huge opportunity to develop sensors and measuring and control instrumentation for various processes within the forest sector, to develop computational intelligence, simulation and machine vision, multimedia and telecommunication, and tomography. Now, it would be wrong to causally link the success of Nokia to finished trees, but it would not be stretching the point to say that the focus on information technology as a support to this sector as a whole may have played a role in the development of Finland's strong capacity in ICT. This particular example, of course, is not transportable directly to South Africa, but it illustrates the concept of sectoral science, technology, and innovation approaches. Continuing with the medium-term initiatives, the DST will continue to participate in international engagements in order to primarily, or most importantly perhaps, mobilize support for the South African SKA bid, to support the SADC Science, Technology and Innovation Initiatives, as well as the Science, Technology and Innovation Desk at SADC. This may seem, honourable members and chair, like a purely philanthropic activity, but surely it's easy to recognise that it is in South Africa's interests to facilitate regional development. This is not a concept that is unique to the Department of Science and Technology. It applies to and is implemented by all or most other government departments. It is in South Africa's long-term interests to be surrounded by a high level of developed countries, or countries with a high level of development around us, in order to improve economic integration and regional economic prospects, and therefore national economic prospects, and facilitating and enabling the development of science and technology capacity in these countries is an important contribution to that national strategic purpose. Establishing new OECD initiatives, promoting access to resources, networks, and knowledge, supporting South Africa's foreign policy, the example that I just mentioned about regional development, and generally projecting South Africa as a smart operator in the global science and technology domain. Continuing with an outline of the medium-term initiatives, we have identified an opportunity to demonstrate the technical, economic, and environmental feasibility of commercially growing abalone in the West Coast, on the West Coast. In Hornerklip Bay is the specific site of this project at this point in the Northern Cape. The pilot project has passed financial due diligence by funding institutions, and we will be establishing a 120-ton per annum production facility with significant private sector investment. This is a very important example of the plans the department has to provide concrete evidence of the impact that science and technology can have on the quality of life and on economic development, even for marginalized communities. Along a similar vein, we have established and will continue to support and grow projects relating to hands-on small-scale trout farming. And this slide presents brief information about this particular initiative, and just under 300 jobs have been established within these projects. These projects are already providing products to important retail companies in South Africa like Woolworths and Pick n Pay. And we are looking at the possibility of establishing a primary processing factory for these co-ops and post-harvest value addition technology transfer in order to extend the beneficiation of these products to the local communities. Having presented a high-level overview of the key initiatives, I'd like to now turn, Chair, to some specific outputs that we have illustrated and captured in the corporate strategy. Starting with this one, to attract investment to the knowledge economy by winning the bid to host the SKA. This is a particular objective, and of course the indicator is success in this SKA bid. We anticipate that this decision may be made by the end of 2012. And we are in the process now of formulating a specific strategy that would hopefully see us being successful in this endeavor. To continue support for the establishment of the Technology Innovation Agency, which would provide support and stimulate and intensify commercialization of intellectual property that leads to new products, patents, services, and high-tech industries. And in terms of our corporate strategy, we are anticipating that TIA will be fully operational by the end of March 2013. That may look like it's a lengthy period, but the establishment of TIA, honorable members, was a complex operation because it wasn't an institution that was established on a greenfield site. There were several other institutions that were folded into TIA, and they all had their own autonomy and institutional mandates. So there isn't a need for the department to have an ongoing engagement with TIA to ensure that the purposes for which all of these institutions were established is strengthened and supported by their folding into TIA. To provide support towards the creation of new companies and ensure technology commercialization of products, processes, and services that address socioeconomic challenges. And in this connection, we have planned to create 25 sustainable technology-based companies with full commercial activities by the end of March 2012. The next illustrative objective is to commercialize alternative energy technologies through spin-off companies in order to diversify the energy industry and the economy. Here our ambition is less than it was in the previous output. At this stage, the corporate strategy has targeted the establishment of one independent company by the end of March 2013. The establishment of the South African National Space Agency, which is the implementation arm of the National Space Program, to have a SANSA fully operational by the 31st of March 2013. Create an enabling environment for health innovation. The indicator here would be the number of health-related research and innovation initiatives established, and we have identified four such health innovation initiatives as our target and for the output. Increasing access to international science, technology, and innovation and development resources that will contribute to national and regional development. We set ourselves the target of effectively 300 million rand by the end of the period for this corporate strategy. Enhancing the impact of South Africa and the region on the international STI environment to make the country and the region region important international STI partners. And here we're looking at the number of SADC science and technology initiatives that are led by South Africa and bringing them to a successful conclusion. And we're targeting five such initiatives. Develop high-level human capital for the national system of innovation. The specific indicator and target here is the awarding of 4,900 bursaries to postgraduate students. Continuing along the human capital vein, to enhance youth access to science, technology, and engineering and mathematics in order to improve their participation in those types of careers. And there are two indicators here that we would like to bring to your attention, honorable members. The number of learners supported at 8,100 learners provided with supplementary tuition in mathematics, physical science, and English. And then the number of people participating in science, engineering, and technology awareness programs, 825,000 people visiting, having visited the National Science Week sites, and 15 million reached through the media by the 31st of March 2013. This compares to the just over 200,000 that recorded as having visited National Science Week sites in the last financial year. To ensure the availability of appropriate infrastructure for research, development, and innovation, and here a key intervention, of course, is the continuing rollout and operationalization of the South African network, Research and Education Network, SANREN. And the specific output that we're planning to achieve is the connection of 76 academic and research institutions to that network by the 31st of March 2013. Moving on, promoting and developing research, development, and innovation in indigenous knowledge systems. And here the target is to establish a center of excellence on indigenous knowledge by March of next year. Of course, it goes without saying that the center of excellence would need to measure up to the usual quality requirements of all such science and technology and research and development initiatives. So as all research projects get vetted through peer review, so do these structural interventions get vetted for their scientific quality and merit. To increase the number of households benefiting from technology-based interventions, here we are planning to have impacted 9,300 households in terms of the provision of technology-based interventions by March 2013. I think this is the last slide with specific examples of indicators and outputs that we are planning to achieve. The objective here is to enable growth in advanced industries through support to companies and investing in new developments. The number of companies provided with technology assistance packages. This is a new intervention from our program on socioeconomic partnerships. The purpose of this is to provide not simply financial, but also in-kind and conceptual support to small and medium enterprises in the technology domain that need technology support, that need support with technology development. To increase support for agro-processing and aquaculture to enhance sustainable economic opportunities, the number of new businesses created, and we're hoping to have established 15 new businesses by March 2013. So, Chair, this has presented to you in 7 slides a number of illustrative examples of outputs and indicators aligned with specific objectives. There is a longer list in the corporate strategy, but I think it would not have added value for me to have gone through the entire list. The intention here was to give the honourable members and yourself an impression of how we're trying to give effect to the high-level strategic imperatives of the department. Turning now to specific the challenge and, I would say, the opportunity of monitoring and evaluation of our activities. At the highest level, it's important to stress, and I will illustrate this later on, that our approach to monitoring and evaluation will be directly informed by the Presidency's outcomes framework. The document that the Presidency published in January this year has been extremely helpful to the Department in helping us to organize our thinking to align with that outcomes document. And as I said, I'll illustrate that just now, how we're starting to give effect to this. There is already a strong focus on outcomes and indicators in our corporate strategy. It's important perhaps for me to mention two specific interventions that we've made in the department in the last year to improve our capacity to engage strategically and meaningfully with this challenge of outcomes and indicators. The first is that we had the pleasure of engaging with the Auditor General's office in a kind of pilot study about performance monitoring. You'll recall, honourable members and chair, that the Auditor General's office will in future be auditing departments not simply on their finances but also on their performance indicators. And we had already engaged with them in the last year on an informal basis to get a sense of how this might pan out within the department. Secondly, we utilized the services of an external consulting company to assist us in sharpening up our thinking around and the way that we formulated indicators and targets, because this is at the heart of monitoring and evaluation and of performance management. And it requires the level of skill at institutional levels as well as at individual levels to really engage with that task. We have, as the honourable members will know, a dedicated monitoring and evaluation unit in the department. Our business plan, which is a document that is established at the departmental level, so it's separate from the corporate strategy. This captures outputs, activities, indicators, targets, and inputs against medium-term outcomes of the corporate strategy. So our business plan at the departmental level, the operational plan as it were, is very closely aligned with the key imperatives of the corporate strategy. We are required to compile quarterly reports against our performance indicators as well as our financial indicators. This is, of course, something that we do then, therefore, on an ongoing basis within the department. We are in the process of developing an internal performance information management system, and my colleague David, who's the acting chief operating officer, can provide more information on this if the members would like to know more about this. Of course, we also undertake ad hoc strategic analyses of progress that we are making in respect of key interventions within the department, and those provide additional information over and above the regular reporting requirements with respect to our performance. The shareholder compact between the minister and the public entities that are linked to the department is the key instrument that we use to align the public entities with the department's imperatives, and this shareholder compact is an area that receives ongoing attention from our monitoring, evaluation, and governance units within the department. And then, of course, project funding to entities is informed by program objectives, and we assess the potential long-term impact of those interventions. So there are processes within the department that ensure that project funding is aligned with the key strategies within the department. As an example, major project interventions are required to be approved at the departmental executive in order to assess their alignment with key departmental strategies. This, Chair and Honourable Members, is a slide which is very dense, and there is no need for the members to study it. I'm using it here to illustrate one part of our attempt to align our monitoring and evaluation activities with the Presidency's outcomes document. You may recognize the colors and the formatting of this document if you're familiar with the Presidency's outcomes document. This is a template that we have extracted from the Presidency's outcomes document, and we have amended the content of this template to reflect departmental priorities that at the same time align with the outcome priorities of that document from the Presidency. In the top left-hand corner, in the sort of dark green or blue cell there, the particular output is formulated as to increase the pool of research, development, and innovation human capital for a growing knowledge economy. Now, this particular output, with the support of the Deputy Minister, has already been introduced at the Human Development Cluster and been agreed there as a key output for that cluster. Of course, there are a number of specific activities that the department on its own undertakes in direct support of this particular output. And those activities and the metrics to measure the department's activities are outlined in this particular document. So here is an illustrative example of how the department is seeking to give effect to its business in strict alignment with the outcomes methodology and the outcomes priorities that are taking shape in the outcomes document from the Presidency. Turning now to a report to the Honourable Members and to the Chair on progress in terms of the gross expenditure on research and development. This slide illustrates the latest available information that we have, and you will see that both in nominal rands as well as in constant rands, there has been, over the last several years, an increase in the gross expenditure on research and development. But you will see that in the last year of recording this information, the rate of increase has dropped over that of previous years. We are still trying to understand exactly why this is so, but that is what the information is providing to us. These, of course, here are in rand terms. In percentage terms, the gross expenditure on research and development survey, the R&D survey, shows that spending on R&D amounted to 18.6 billion, which was the figure from the previous slide, which is 9.3% of the GDP for that period of assessment. I beg your pardon, Deputy Minister, thank you for correcting me. 0.93% of the GDP. This is unfortunately 0.02% lower than we had recorded in the previous year. Now, my understanding is that this difference of 0.02% is statistically valid. So the difference between 0.95% and 0.93% is a statistically valid difference as we understand it. So there has been a slight decrease in gross expenditure on research and development.
Just a little point of clarification. It's not a decrease in expenditure on research and development, but a decrease in expenditure on research and development as a percentage of GDP.
Yes.
And that's very important. The expenditure increased, but it was also a growth period, so therefore the percentage went down slightly.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. That's a critical qualification on these two slides, because as this slide here illustrates, the quantum increased, but at the same time, the rate of growth of the gross national product increased, and the rate of growth of the GNP was higher than the growth in research and development expenditure. So this is the explanation for this observation. Private sector spending was measured at 57.7%, and in this slide here, members of the committee, we have unpacked the gross expenditure on research and development into different sectors, and it is important, I think, to note that almost 60% of the expenditure on research and development takes place in the private sector. This is an indicator that puts us into the league of developed countries, where even in many developed countries, the contribution of the private sector to growth, to gross expenditure on research and development is lower than it is in South Africa. So this is an aspect of South Africa's science and technology system that is fairly unique amongst emerging and developing countries. And in our view, is a source of considerable strength of our national system of innovation, and of course presents significant opportunities for further public-private partnerships, such as the Anglo-Platinum one that I outlined to you early on. Chair and honourable members, this is the budget that has been submitted, and which you are requested to vote on. You'll see that over the next 2 years there's a slight increase in the budget, but at this point indications from Treasury are that in the outer year of this particular cycle we can expect a decrease in the budget. We anticipate that this will all depend, of course, on the ability of the state to generate new or additional revenue over this period, but at this point this is the projection of the departmental budget over this period. Here is for the coming financial year and a breakdown of the key areas in which the budget has been aligned. with payments for capital assets. This is, of course, capital assets within the department, not capital assets in its entities. Compensation at 215 million rand, constituting 4.7% of the annual budget. Goods and services at a quantum of 147 million rand, constituting 3.2%. So if we were to take the spending within the department together, 0.1, 4.7 and 3.2%, this constitutes just under 8% of the total departmental budget. When we have presented this figure to international partners, they seem to be very impressed that only 8% of the total departmental budget is spent on managing, on running the department, and that over 90% of the departmental budget, in fact, moves into the system. And so this seems to be a pretty good indicator. That does not mean, members of the committee, of course, that we would not seek to keep that figure at 8% or below. But I think it's important to stress that this is already a pretty good indicator. This is a breakdown of the budget according to the different programs within the department. The program one, which is the administrative heart of the department, would be allocated 4% of the budget. Research, development and innovation, and its various entities, of course, 28%, international cooperation and resources, including the Africa Institute for South Africa, 3%, human capital and knowledge systems, which is the program that oversees the activities of the National Research Foundation, for example, 38% of the budget, and then the program 5, socioeconomic partnerships, 27% of the budget, and this program oversees the activities of the HSRC as well as the CSRR. So it's important to bear that in mind when considering the budget allocations to the different programs. Here, honorable members of the committee, is an analysis of our historical spending trends. You will know that we have performed very well by comparison to several other government departments in terms of our historical spending trends, and this is graphic evidence to that extent. The organogram, briefly, this is a part of the requirement of the corporate plan, is to present this organogram. The members of the committee will probably know, as I've already mentioned previously, we have several programs, one dealing with corporate services and governance, one dealing with research, development and innovation, which is responsible for biotechnology and energy and space, for example, international cooperation and resources, human capital and knowledge systems, and then socioeconomic partnerships. All of these programs are headed by Deputy Directors General. The program number 4 on human capital and knowledge systems has recently appointed a new Deputy Director General in the form of Dr. Molapo Tobela, who was previously in the Department of Education, now Higher Education. And with his knowledge of the system, we look forward to positive developments and strengthening of human capital and knowledge systems in the country. And then there is an office of a Chief Operating Officer who is responsible for coordination at a strategic level of the activities of the various programs in support of the Director General. This is a list of the public entities, and I must admit that I recognized last night there was a mistake in the form of the Chumisano Trust. This has, of course, been folded into the Technology Innovation Agency. So I beg your pardon, members of the committee, for this oversight. The Chumisano Trust is now part of the Technology Innovation Agency, together with the Biotechnology Regional Innovation Centers, for example. So it's no longer a separate entity. I was not sure, perhaps the minister can either, the space agency, I was not sure whether to list it here. It exists, but it's not yet operational. So that is certainly an entity that is coming to life now, is being given birth to right now. So next year, certainly, there would need to be a bullet for this year. So in conclusion, Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee, our medium-term outputs and priorities are driven by the medium-term strategic framework of government and by the National Research and Development Strategy and the 10-year innovation plan of the department. I would argue that our operational and strategic performance has been satisfactory to our intents. The growth in resources and investments by comparison to national growth, at least during the last period that it was measured, may be slowing. The establishment, and I must emphasize again the point that the Deputy Minister correctly reminded me of, that it's in comparison to the rate of growth of the national economy during the period under review, which was now 18 months ago. The establishment of innovation instruments is proceeding well with the operationalization of the Technology Innovation Agency, the progress in the Intellectual Property Act, and the finalization of the regulations that give effect to that act. There is an ongoing and continued focus on human capital development and innovation skills. The public entities are aligned to implement government priorities through the Shareholders Compact, and we are trying to improve this system even further. And a robust monitoring and evaluation system is being put in place within the department. This, Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, brings me to the end of this presentation, and I thank you for the time that you have given me for this. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chair. It was quite a very robust presentation. So far as I'm concerned, very clear. And actually consistent with the previous reports of the good work of the department from the Auditor General. So I happen to have read this document very thoroughly, and I was also very impressed to see what you are doing. But I am not giving a view for members to. This is what I just felt when I read the document about how you are planning the future of, you know, the robustness of the department in order to address economic growth and then an impact to society. But without any waste of time, I'll allow members to interact with you. They may have many questions for clarification, input, or question. I can see already a hand from Mrs. Shin. Honorable Shin, I see your hand. I see the hand from Honorable Smith. A hand from Honorable Dusha, Honorable Muchumi, in that order. Thank you. We will record their questions and then you can respond later on.
Thank you, Chairperson. The problem with a presentation like this is where do you start? There's so much information here and so much that needs to be teased out. But I think we're going to have to do a lot of that over various sessions. But I'll start with sort of general stuff, is that you've been voted an extra $400 million. And over 3 years, you're saving yourself something like $578 million on various economies and prunings and that. And when you go through the budget itself, you find that every program has had a fair amount of pruning on it. I would like to know what both philosophy, if you like, informed what you were going to cut out. And then I think if my simple arithmetic was right, and it may not be, you seem to have gathered together an extra 2 billion rand from your extra money and your pruning over 3 years. So my simple arithmetic might need some correction. But you've gathered together quite a nice nest egg of extra money. what is that going to be spent on? I know that there's the extra research chairs and other increased costs and that, but I'd like to, A, what informed your pruning and why you needed to create this extra financial space, specifically what for that. And it also concerns that you said it's the Treasury that's decided in 3 years' time you're going to have to do with less. What has informed that Treasury decision as to why you, in 3 years' time you're going to need less money? I'll just leave it at that to start with. Thank you.
Chair, so I've got the same problem. I, in fact, got about 100 questions and I have to prune them right down to one or two. Otherwise, I'll bore you stiff. So I hope you have a second round. I enjoyed the presentation. Just thank you very much for that. Maybe just start at the beginning and see how far you let me go. You know, if you look at slide 3, it talks about the importance of technology innovation and speeding up economic growth. Now, one of the questions I've had, and I put to the department, I haven't yet got a response, is the extent to which we measure this. Do we actually know the effectiveness of our spend on R&D and technology and all the rest and its impact on economic growth, or do we work on assumptions that if we simply spend money on certain things, it will have a beneficial impact? I would imagine, might be complicated, but I imagine it's measurable, and I'd like to know whether it has been measured and if that measurement informs strategically the direction one has been taken. On slide 7, that's about. Oh yeah, the 10-year innovation plan has these five grand challenges. And the farmer to farmer, I've got a clear idea of what you do, that makes a lot of sense, the space science is fine, human and social science. The one I don't really get any angle on from the department is energy. I've got no, I don't see any indication anywhere on what is being spent or what energies are being put into energy in this country. I presume particularly alternative energies. I know references made later on to alternative energies in the sense of there being, you know, high-end new stuff. But much alternative is not new. It's well-established engineering and technology elsewhere in the world. It's not particularly new. It's not mainstream here because we're coal-dependent. But what is the role of this department in getting us off coal onto something else? If one takes, for example, some of the programs that have been stopped at a national level, the concentrated solar collector, the one that was going to be built in the Northern Cape, it's on hold, there's no money. You know, are you guys involved in that? Or what precisely do you do on the energy side? Just got to go through these things in order. On slide 11, you make reference to the Anglo-Plat 100 million patent development fund. And of course, I think it's very good. We obviously do need these private partnerships and developments. But one of the things that it does interest me, it was a reference being made to battery technology. And my concern is, it's just a concern really, is to whether this is something that we sort of, or to what extent, in fact, in what we do, we attempt to go it alone on the understanding that our technology may be a winner and then give us a platform for globally. It certainly is the case, maybe with the PV, the PV that got licensed in Germany is coming back to us via PAL. But on the battery side, for vehicles, for example, which are all lithium-ion based, when we have no lithium here, of course, it's all from Bolivia or somewhere, there's enormous amounts of energy being spent internationally on international cooperation on battery technologies. And I don't know whether, for example, if you look at the Joule, half the cost of the Joule is going to be the battery. Are we trying to go it alone in batteries, or are we going to try and get into whatever mainstream international platforms grow in battery technology? Got to go through the numbering here. Yeah. One of the slide 17 here talks about the medium-term priorities and deliverables. And, of course, you've got this whole strong innovation chain in biotech, nanotech, hydrogen, science, and so on and so forth. More makes perfect sense. To what extent do you see anything, to what extent is there anything here which is sort of, this is 17, it talks about the medium-term priorities informed by the strategic framework, 10-year innovation plan, and so on. And the first one, slide 17, it talks about the development of strong innovation chains of a medium-term priority, which of course makes perfect sense, in the areas that are identified, hydrogen, space, ICT, and so on. To what extent do we actually have anything which links actually to what would term sort of beneficiation. So the reference was made just now to platinum, for example. One could review the battery thing and other platinum products as part of the beneficiation program. But to what extent is the potential in our other sectors for beneficiation, which would be part of your programs? Much of it seems to be like completely new greenfield stuff as opposed to beneficiation type approaches. Slide 19 talks about another, of course, is the finalization of the FET capital benefit strategy, which I think is about the most important thing this whole department could be doing, almost. I was listening to the radio this morning, I don't know if the colleagues heard it. There's a discussion on mining engineering, one of the, I think it was on, I don't know which program I was on. You know, South Africa produces the greatest number of mining engineers in the world, but only about 13% of graduates stay in the industry. They all move on to other things. The figures given this morning were something like, we only produce 1,800 engineers a year, whereas a country like Canada produces 10,000 engineers a year. But even within that, huge numbers don't stay in the industry. And they talk about a crisis in mining, for example, where we can't even import skills because the global pipeline for mining engineers is desperate everywhere. Australia is desperately headhunting, Canada's headhunting, everybody is. So if we've got one of my concerns here is that even when we produce people, you produce the engineers, so the next day they're working for some asset manager as investment analysts instead of doing engineering. I mean, most of our asset managers are in fact engineers. Half of them are anyway, half of them are engineers. It's a bizarre situation. So my concern about the FET development strategy is also the retention strategy. Is that part of it, the retention strategy? Because we seem to lose people more quickly than we produce them. Sorry, Chair, almost done. Slide 25, what is this about? I've done that one. I've got a very big concern about this this percentage of gross expenditure in R&D. It really worries me. Look at that graph that was presented on slide 36, which shows that in 1991 we were 1%, and we've gone, we dipped quite low, then we shot up to 0.95, down to 0.93. Now I understand the logic, 0.93, because we're having we're having a boom, so your rate of economic growth is faster than your spend on RDP on R&D. But of course, the reverse presumably has happened in the last 18 months because we've had a recession. So one would imagine if the spending here has been fairly constant as a percentage of the economic growth, it would have grown again. So we may be well over one. I have no idea. But by the same token, we're now going to go out of the recession. So whatever we are, it's going to go down again unless the spend is up. So my question really is that if you take last year's budget, and we had the discussion with the minister, the agreement was, I understand, in fact, I thought it was part of the government's agreed strategy, not simply a vague idea. I thought we had set a new target that our R&D spend is going to increase from 1 to 2% over 10 years from last year. But if one takes the trends, my real question is that going to happen? Because to do that, you've got to increase by 0.1 every year in simple terms. And if we're not going to maintain that, are we going to get to the 2% level? If so, when can we make that target? And to me, that's really critical. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. One of the report is informative. Comparatively simple for us to understand, meaning that it's really reader-friendly, and it's encouraging us to check more on some of the things that we think that are closer to our hearts. I won't be long, Chair. On page 12, which is medium-term initiative, slide number 5, I just wanted to check if that I see that cooperative is more in the Western Cape, which I asked the Honourable next to me what is trout, and she said it's a type of fish, a very expensive type of fish. I just wanted to check what about other coastal lines like in the Eastern Cape and in KZN, both of them are more in the those provinces are more rural. Have you ever checked on how best can, even if it's not cloud, but a cooperative in that area? Sorry, the second one is on page 13. The creating an enabling environment for health innovations. Then you say there are 4 new health innovations initiatives by 31st March. Which are those? Are you in a position to just tell us which are those? The last one will be on page 15. And here you'll pardon my ignorance if that has been published, which is slide number 6, selected output targets. How do you identify those households, and where are they located? You say that to increase the number of households benefiting from technology-based initiatives, interventions, where are those, and what is the yardstick or the criteria that you use as the department in identifying those households? I think those are just a few. The others will really depend on me going to the department and check more and on some of the issues that have been raised. The last thing, Chair, which I think is important, as we were coming to the meeting, one of our members, unfortunately, had a very bad situation. She fell. She had to be taken to hospital, and that is the Honorable Member Nyama, who is the member of the African National Congress. I think we will then we'll check on what then has happened. I think for me it was important to tell members of that unfortunate situation that happened this morning. Thank you. You may have seen that it happened here just in front of Max Building. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think let me just make a short comment on that. Our Honorable Member Nyama, when they arrived here in the morning, when she moved out of the bus, I think she just had an attack or fits or something. I don't know. I'm not a specialist to know what exactly happened, but she felt I just arrived around the time I was passing coming here. She a bit of fits, but I saw the blood coming out of the mouth. But according to the whip said, no, maybe it's because she was biting the teeth. Yes. But she was in a very bad condition. Mm-hmm. I understand there was a little bit of delay from the response of the ambulances also. What they call it here is 911 also in South Africa. But so he has been taken to the hospital. So I think it's important to express an apology for her, but also to make members know exactly that she's not in a good condition. We will have to actually monitor her progress as a committee. Also, what I think we forgot to highlight was Mrs. Killian has, Honorable Killian had always some meetings of the Chiefs Forum. She's a member of that, and that's why she arrived a bit late. She had apologized. I just overlooked to express this. Sorry for that. Okay, right. I think the next question was Honorable Muchoma.
My question is on page 11 that relates to the Rural Quality of Life Improvement Initiative that the department intends embarking on. What I'd like to find out is where are these initiatives to be implemented? Which provinces in the country is being or are being targeted? And the other one relates to on page 16. You mentioned some challenges relating to the implementation of KPAs. But what, maybe I missed that, you'll pardon me. I missed the intervention that you came up with, that these are the interventions or these are the measures that you are going to put in place to address the challenges, or the department is going to live with those challenges until, I don't know. But that's what I want to find out. The other one is on page 25. I think on page 22, for instance, you indicated that you are looking at feasibility of commercially growing abalone. You indicated the location of that. Where is that going to be done? But in most of the things that you said you're going to do, I find that lacking. For instance, on page 25, you are going to create 25 sustainable technology-based companies with full commercial activities by the end of March 2013. But then I miss the location of those. Where are those going to be done? Or you just think when you'll cross the river or the bridge when you come by it. The other one, I think my colleague did touch it, is on page 2026, the four new health innovations. She asked, which are those? My question is going to where are those being located? The other one, you have a target of 4,900 students too, that you intend awarding bursaries by March 31st, 2013. Those are post-grad students. What I'd like to find out is it, how have you categorized that 4,900 students? I want to know the race, how many that you intend taking in, how many females, males you intend taking in, and the location, how many do you intend sourcing or soliciting from the rural areas? Because that's that those are the most marginalized when it comes to this science and tech. And something that is very close to my heart is that I'm so passionate about how many disabled people, irrespective of gender and class, you intend taking in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. My colleague Marvin Pius has to go to a cluster meeting, and most of these questions that have been posed thus far fall directly into her area of responsibility, and I think that the committee would benefit from her being able to answer those here before she leaves. But she should have already left, but I've asked her to stay. So with your permission, if we could perhaps take those first and then pick up other questions. Thank you very much. Marjorie, if you could pick up, if you get the note, we can just pick it up.
Thank you. I must apologize. The cluster meeting is about employment and such like, so it's important that we attend, and it's in preparation for the minister's meeting this evening. So my apologies around that. The first question that related to the treasury-led pruning exercise, all departments were required to look into their budgets and then follow guidelines around looking for items where there's slow-moving expenditure, number one, and then items where it's in the department's powers to slow down the pace of implementation, so that you then use less funding, and then, of course, in terms of general reprioritization, to look for efficiencies within your spending. And the department then looked at, let's say, the kind of approach of saying the MTF usually gives you an inflation-adjusted growth year on year. and we try to manage our programs in such a way that we dispense with like an inflation figure. So you'd find across the board, not by the same amount, initiatives were able to approach the implementers and to say, can you do without that adjustment without bringing your operations to a standstill? So you find that there were a number of areas that have been cut back, scaled back from the initial allocation by Treasury. That is one means by which we approach the issue of pruning. We also have to approach, because you can see that 92% of our budget is transferred. We have to sit down with CSIR, HSRC, NRF, and ask them what is it that they could let go first year, second year, and third year. But the one thing that was maintained as a priority is, as a member that correctly identified, is the human capital development. So that you saw there was an effort to safeguard the commitment to human capital development. The next set of questions around the effective spend, the effectiveness of the spend as it relates to the economy. We have approached this from two fronts. We've examined exactly what it is we spend our funds on and what the results are that we should be looking at. Now, human capital is an investment in its own right. So whether you give someone a bursary and so on, you're developing human capital for the economy. And so our target there is the results in the context of how many bursaries as an input, but then at the output end, how many are we seeing as graduates? And this is why we've even looked at strengthening the numbers that come into this pipeline by increasing the size of the bursary. Still not adequate, but with the limited resources, we are trying to make a remedy. When it comes to the research investment component, where now you've actually got doctoral researchers that are applying themselves, there are a range of results. If it's in the scientific field and it's growing knowledge about something, then it's a publication, and this is what we are tracking. And the growth in researchers undertaking relevant research with publications has a direct impact on both the social development of the South African society as well as the economy. But something that we've begun to track now from all of our work, and it links very directly to the NIPMO, the National Intellectual Property Management Office, as well as the work of TIA, is to say when we're investing in research for economic gain, then we should be tracking patents, we should also be tracking commercialization. Because some efforts you just want to hold the technical capabilities you've developed secret until you can actually get a strong commercial outcome. So you'll notice that there's a trend now moving into our measurements in terms of not just registered patents, but even patent applications that have been lodged and so on. We also, on another track, are looking at this positioning we've taken, that over this long-term trajectory, this economy must transform into a knowledge-based economy. There is World Bank and OECD hard statistical indicators on what constitutes a knowledge-based economy. We're not just adopting that. We are saying we want the economy to transform, so it qualifies as a knowledge-based economy, but on which counts? And so an exercise has been undertaken. We, at, let's call it the first stage, we have not presented this draft on knowledge-based economy indicators, the basket that South Africa could look at adopting, to our minister and our deputy minister. So it's in the process. It's still in work in progress. On the issue of the grand challenges, and most specifically the energy, you've quite correctly picked up that we're doing considerable work. Research has started on hydrogen, on fuel cells, and so on. But the Anglo one, at this point in time, the department is heavily engaged in negotiation. We have actually stopped ourselves because we saw that our original thinking about the contractual benefits is not quite what we thought. And so we've hauled in legal advice and so on, and we're revisiting what is the contractual commitment we will be committing to in that relationship on the battery technology. So this gives you a sense that we are looking at it from the context of whatever we're investing there must be a strong realization of the benefits through to South Africa on intellectual property, but as well as in technology licensing and commercial uptake. On the medium term, the innovative value chain that we speak about in terms of MTS priority and beneficiation specifically, we have a number of areas where the sole focus is on value adding, is on beneficiation. We have a broad initiative called the Advanced Metals Initiative. And in the Advanced Metals Initiative, we've got four platforms: light metals, precious metals, new metals, and light, precious, new.
I've
just forgotten the last one. But other than the ferrous metals. And overall, in that program, we already think about 3 patents have come through. There is some very promising results coming from the research that has been undertaken there. Now, that portfolio is heavily metal-focused, and it lends itself to implementation of the national beneficiation strategy as well as the DST's own advanced manufacturing strategies and the search for light metals, better-performing metals, and so forth. We also have, outside of that, under advanced manufacturing, a whole portfolio area around chemicals. And there we are looking at the commitments to the fluorochemicals expansion initiative. And we've had some breakthroughs there as well, very promising indeed. Together with Department of Trade and Industry and the IBC, we work together to set up our Fluorco, a company that looks at further beneficiation beyond just digging up the fluor spar, which is world class, almost best in the world, reserves of fluor spar. So there's ore and there's metals, and the ore generally finds its way because it's performance related. So mineral ore, so it's performance related into chemicals and so on. We also have other initiatives which is closer to your small and medium enterprises in agriculture. So we have initiatives on post-harvest innovation technologies. So there's your beneficiation. Rather than a tomato, what about tomato paste or tomato juice? Just to give you the simplest of examples. But some of our produce doesn't actually reach international markets because we cannot meet what we call phytosanitary conditions. And we have an entire program in partnership with industry. The Deputy Minister will probably meet you somewhere and tell you all about that, the PHI, P-H-I program. And then we have, in addition to that, your general agro-processing around essential oils, rather than just planting vegetables, what about high-value products where it's extraction from the agricultural produce? So your primary aim is not the agricultural produce, but it is extractions and beneficiation from that. I don't want to go too much, but I think we could actually late stage have a fuller presentation on some of those. On the target of there is no target of 2%. I think somewhere there was a little bit of a mistake. That is an aspiration which the DST has. But there is some talk within the cabinet, let's say, strata, in the context of should we move now from the 1% to the 1.5%. This discourse actually came up with the formulation of this monitoring and evaluation and target setting issues and so on. It hasn't been hard made. It's still at an aspirational level. But it's a very good point and something that we are applying our mind, and Thomas to some extent alluded to it. If we've got this 10-year trajectory, we have to actually start costing that. So then we see what is the quantum of growth we want from the government side. We've got some very interesting developments within the Treasury, where we put forward a case that in the taxing centres to promote more private sector investment, we're sitting with a problem in that small engineering companies are not applying, they're not qualifying for that taxing centre because they're not yet making enough profit to actually benefit from the R&D taxing centres. And Treasury has now recently given us guidance in a new scheme that we can introduce, which is not tax credits, which they don't want to introduce, but it's a different type of scheme which will allow them the same benefit of 14 cents in the rand to drop the cost of doing R&D. So that is something we are pursuing. Because remember, we don't only want to grow government spending on R&D to make that 1.5%. We also want to grow the private sector spending. Yes, the location. That is something that has been we've been applying our minds to quite considerably. Those households, first off, those households that we're targeting, under the social impact banner that the department carries, we are looking at sustainable human settlements, and we're looking at the fact that there's a large proportion of South Africa's population that is underserviced, and that in the foreseeable future, they will continue to be underserviced when it comes to access to water, when it comes to access to electricity, when it comes to access to affordable housing. And some of the initiatives that we've been driving very strongly is the deployment of alternative technologies to make sure that those that are underserviced, and it's unlikely that the conventional systems that are being deployed by municipalities will reach them, we are deploying alternative technology. There's an initiative in the Western Cape, and I'm happy to report that the DST's intervention on access to water in Eastern Cape is being extended. The municipality is building on that capability that the DST is deploying with alternative technologies. So it increases the number of households that will be reached with this clean and safe drinking water. The other locations that we are deploying is in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga. We hope in the interdepartmental committee, which reports to Deputy Minister Derek Hanekom and Deputy Minister of Water Affairs and so on, we hope that in future, with the success of what we are piloting in Eastern Cape, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, that we'll be able to come back and say we've been to other water scarce provinces. It's not only the water, it's also issues of energy. And right now there are a number of energy proposals that are on the table. They are small, off-grid type of solutions where you can reach a community and address a community's needs for lighting and for use of, for operation of the TV and maybe a small fridge. Unfortunately, a problem we picked up is that there's no solution to the cooking problem. So we may be able to give, whether you look at solar or whether you look at any of these, they get access to lighting and the operation of the TV and a small fridge. The requirement for running a stove is far too high for any of these options that we've been talking about so far. Whether you're talking about your biodigesters or you're talking about solar or any of those. So the DST is actually in the process of trying to get to a portfolio of these options that we can test and pilot. And we'll probably be coming back to you quite soon on that one. On the fisheries ones, the aquaculture ones, we've got the trout in the Western Cape. That was explained. We've also got the piloting of the abalone in the Western Cape and some new developments. We're realizing that it's the big problem is our access to the this will be the larval stage of your abalone and so on. We actually need to start hatcheries in the Western Cape that can ensure we have access to that and grow to fingerling stage and so on. So there's prospects of setting that up, so there will be more activities in the Western Cape. In the Eastern Cape, we've had some very good pilots in terms of marine, not so much your freshwater, but your marine fisheries. And this has been on yellowtail and dusty cob and so on. We've got a few pictures of the Deputy Minister where he's been out to see how the things are operating. I'm bringing into the mix, Deputy Minister. And so Eastern Cape, we've had initiatives in the Eastern Cape. We want to look at taking the Eastern Cape one and going up north towards KZN. I should also reassure members that the exercise we ran in the Western Cape on the trout, we actually undertook studies together with the provincial government department and the Department of Water Affairs to look at inland dams. And the problem we face is on two fronts. Some
water. You can't just think you've got water and you're going to put fish in there. The fish may not survive depending on the temperature. Some fish are cold water, some are hot water. The other aspect that we've got to look at in terms of the problem is that in South Africa, your water levels drop very rapidly in your dam, and you can't have that if you're actually wanting sustainable and long-term fisheries. So we have checked out provinces on freshwater. We've got actual pilots that have gone beyond the Western Cape into the Eastern Cape and looking at KZN. The households, I've mentioned where these are distributed, and yes, I think I've covered most of the initiatives that I should.
Thank you very much, Marjorie. Chair, if you would permit Marjorie to go and represent the department at the cluster, that would be helpful.
I think we can go. If there are any questions, there will be written questions. We'll write you one.
Thank you. Chair, we do of course have the benefit of one or two other individuals that have been associated with the department for a long period of time and carry significant institutional and system level memory. And I was wondering if the Deputy Minister might not wish to add some comments to what Marjorie has said. I've identified a few things that came through in the questions which Marjorie has not picked up on. I'll do that. But I was wondering if the Deputy Minister might want to make some additional remarks at this stage.
Well, thank you. That's really delegating upwards or downwards. I'm not quite sure, but I think the important question was on the budget and the outer year of the budget. I think, honourable member, if you look at that slide 37, I think it is, you'll see that in fact, if you look at the three columns. 2010-11, 11-12, 12-13, you'll see the real dramatic drop resulting in the drop from 4.969 to 4.560 is in the area of research, development and innovation from 2011-12 to 2012-13. But that is largely attributed to the very large additional element that we had in that budget, which is around the meerkat, and it comes to an end. Well, the possible good news is, if we do succeed in our bid, which will be made known by the end of 2012, that would represent an injection of 1.5 billion euros, which will not be from our budget, but would be from an international consortium, if we get it, of course. But that's the big drop there that you see there. I mean, the rest, I think Marjorie has answered fairly adequately about where we try to cut, where we can cut without compromising on what we set out to do. But other ones, I didn't have any other specific ones you want me to. I'm sorry, from the R&D question, I think Honourable Member Peter is right. But I think it's partly answered. Our intention, though, is it's going to take its dip, but in particular, there always is a lag. And in all likelihood, you're right, that given that the next period under review will be a period of even possibly negative growth, and that the percentage is likely to be considerably up. But then that shouldn't give us any kind of false illusion that we're suddenly doing fantastically well. But as long as the point is to have an upward trajectory, a steadily upward trajectory, I think what is still waiting to really take effect is the incentive through the tax rebates given to the private sector. The uptake is not quite where it should be yet, but it's increasing. Because the normal situation is obviously our state expenditure should be increasing systematically, expenditure on research and development, but private sector, we've got to get the proportion right. And the way we get additional private sector expenditure is to give them some kind of incentive to spend more on R&D. And I think that hasn't fully kicked in yet. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
the Deputy Minister for those observations. There were a few more things, as I indicated, that I felt hadn't yet been provided specific responses to, and if I could just pick up on those. To extend the response that Marjorie made about the measurement of the impact of the department's activities, I think it's important to say that we grapple, probably like most others do, with how well can you define and how reasonable is it to expect a causal link between outputs of a department, the outcome that those might achieve, and the impact of those outcomes. The further you go down that chain, the more difficult it becomes to develop a causal relationship. And the only thing we can definitely measure is what the output of the department is. We can hope for certain outcomes and we can establish statistical linkages, but the control of the outcomes is reduced, and we can hope for certain impacts, but the measure of control of the department over those impacts becomes further diluted. So this is a general problem that one faces in this respect. I thought another example that is already in the slides is the reference to the Titanium Centre of Competence, which Marjorie did not pick up, but I thought it was important just to illustrate this in response to the question about beneficiation of South African strategic edges, as it were. Titanium is a resource which is fairly abandoned in South Africa, unfortunately in many cases in dunes in sensitive mining areas. But Richards Bay, for example, is a producer of titanium. Titanium, honourable members, is a very lightweight, extremely strong metal that is increasingly being used in aircraft manufacture and machining because of its weight advantage. But it is a very, very difficult metal to fabricate. So you can melt it, you can produce chunks of it, but to machine it and to mould it and to cast it into the items that you need for aircraft machines and so on is a significant technological challenge. This particular Titanium Centre of Competence, if you look at the slides again, honourable members, it draws together all of those competencies. So we are wanting to move South Africa in this particular area way beyond being an exporter of ingots of titanium to other countries that have the technologies to then machine them and fabricate them and so on. The question about the jewel, just to perhaps mention that there has been agreement to establish an interministerial committee on this, and we have presented to our minister draft terms of reference for such an interministerial committee, and I think that those have been communicated to the other ministers that will be joining her on that. I don't know exactly how far that process has gone, but the point is that we recognize very well that the department, you know, can only take innovation development up to a certain point. The further that progress goes, the more the importance of bringing in partners outside of the department, either public partners or private partners, becomes important. And it's in this context also that the Deputy Minister's response, I think, is relevant. The questions that were asked about the specific projects, the social impact projects, shall we call them, Marjorie gave a response in this regard already. But it seemed to me that both on this, on social impact activities of the department, as well as the department's direct contribution to, shall we say, the macro economy, to industrial development, perhaps, Chair, these are two topics for more detailed presentations by the department to the portfolio committee. We have a very proud record, I think, in both of these areas. We have very interesting and innovative interventions that we can share with the honourable members if there should be a desire for that. So this is something the department would be very happy to provide an insight in with dedicated presentations in this regard. It's important, though, of course, to remember that the function of the department in this respect is to demonstrate the use of technologies for these socially beneficial purposes. We are not a department that would implement these on a large scale. Those that would need to be taken up by other aspects of the public
or the private sectors. The question asked about the references to human capital development and the strategic challenge of retention strategies and how do you manage this? It's important, of course, to remind oneself that human capital development is a challenge not just to South Africa, the world. All emerging and advanced economies are competing for a scarce pool of human resources. And with globalization, that competition is happening globally. And so we're not unique in this respect. There are certain dynamics within that problem that the department has zero control over and can probably not develop very efficient responses to. There are some things which we can. For example, the importation of scarce skills is an area where we can, together with, in partnership with the Department of Home Affairs, we can help to facilitate the importation of scarce skills that align with science and technology research and development imperatives in the country. And members may know that the Department of Science and Technology and the Department of Home Affairs do have an operational agreement whereby we engage with the Department of Home Affairs when we become aware of constraints that impact on either individuals or groups of skills that we're trying to bring into the country. There's an operational agreement between the two departments whereby we can then facilitate this. I don't know at this point whether the human capital development strategy, the SET strategy, has a specific aspect on the retention strategy. I don't know, Honourable Member, I would need to check that out, but I would wonder whether retention strategies are something that can be planned at system level as compared to something that actually has to be planned at an institutional level, because the retention strategies, to a large extent, have to be developed around individual and particular career opportunities and challenges and so on. So I don't know whether the colleagues that are pulling together the strategy have given thought to this. I think they need to, clearly, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily something that can be addressed in a system-level strategy like that. The questions about the four health innovation projects, I'm afraid I cannot answer that. I guess, a bit like what Marjorie said earlier on, there probably are already now some concrete ideas about what those projects might be. So it's possible that for two out of the four that we've indicated as outputs, there are concrete ideas. But that on some of the others, there's still explorations going on about what specific health innovation interventions are to be made. So I can't provide more details on that at this point. There was an important question about the challenges. I presented a list of four challenges for the department. It's on slides. Yes, thank you very much. Slide 16. And the question was, well, you presented us with the challenges that you've come across as a department, but what are you doing about them? And I think that this requires a response, Chair. Well, the first one, in terms of the economic recession, we have identified the impact of the economic recession as a key risk to the department in various programs. So in my own area of responsibility of international cooperation, we've tried to anticipate what is the risk of this for us as a department, and we have formally incorporated this risk into the departmental risk register, which includes the department's managerial responses to these risks. Now, I don't know what the risk register for other programs within the department might say in this regard, but we've tried to systematize our engagement with this particular risk and challenge. The intergovernmental coordination, well, I think you may have picked up, Honourable Members and Chair, from Marjorie's presentation that her activities and her responsibilities are extremely integrated with other government department activities. And as a consequence of that, she's in regular and intimate contact almost with other government departments. So at the departmental level, I'm quite certain that the department's interfaces with other government departments are as effective and efficient as probably one can hope them to be. I mean, maybe they could be a bit more, but there's a significant effort there. But there's a level of interdepartmental and intergovernmental coordination that is served by the clusters, where there can perhaps be, these are areas, as I said earlier on, Cabinet has looked at this and is considering how best to improve the intergovernmental and interdepartmental coordination within the cluster system. You will appreciate, honourable members and chair, that this is not something we as a department have any influence over, but we appreciate the fact that Cabinet is attending to this. Third challenge, the question about synergy amongst various delivery calendars, and in specific the example that I mentioned of the challenge of aligning the movement of funds from the NRF into the system and from the department into the NRF. We've established a task team between the NRF and the Department of Science and Technology that is looking at the specific implications of that misalignment of these two cycles. And identifying specific problems that have arisen from it, and what are the joint interventions we can make to ensure minimal delays in movements of funds into the research system as a result of that. So there's a specific task team that's been set up to deal with that. The establishment of new institutions absorbs time and capacity. Well, that's an operational challenge when you take on the task of setting up new organizations. You have to manage that task within the department up to a certain point. So we have tried to increase on a short-term basis capacity in the department in some units that are responsible for rolling out some of these institutions. And on one or two occasions, I think we have also sought support from external service providers so that the internal energy of the department is not completely diluted. And then the last question, which also was a very serious one, Chair, was the question about how does the department oversee, monitor, and influence the distribution of bursaries, the racial distribution and the geographic distribution of bursaries and the gender distribution. This is, of course, at the heart of the department's imperative to ensure equitable access to resources and equitable distribution of resources. And it's important to mention here that the National Research Foundation is our key agency for distribution of bursaries. And the National Research Foundation has policies as well as quantitative targets in respect of distribution of bursaries in the domains indicated by the Honourable Member. And those policies are considered at and approved by the board of the National Research Foundation. And in formulating those, the views of the department and of the specific program in the department responsible for human capital development are also sought. I don't know the details of these right now, but that in general, Honourable Member, is how we're dealing with this. So both the department and the National Research Foundation, which would be presenting its business plan to you in due course, are very mindful of the importance of this issue and are engaging with it very systematically. And the historical statistics are available from the National Research Foundation. And if there's a desire to have them produced here, we could easily attend to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the feedback. Before I come to you, I'll start with my question, then I'll come to all of you.
my first question is it's about TIA. You are saying a TIA will be fully operational by 2013. But also, if my memory serves me well, initially you said by 2010 to 2011, then we'll be making sure we focus on making sure that we operationalize TIA. And now I'm trying to understand why we're shifting TIA from 2011 to 2013, even rather than, I think I would prefer to say 2012, because there are challenges that you've mentioned in slide 26, if I'm not mistaken. But I think this is, to me, let me ask, what are the challenges that we are experiencing in making sure that you operationalize TIA? Because maybe we may find that the challenges are so huge and they're so difficult in such a way that you need another 2 years in order to go to operationalize TIA. That's my first question. I think, Chair, this is a comment, or this is my observation in terms of the output. You see, the output, the way they are crafted, is very difficult to monitor such output. Let me start with the output that was raised by my colleagues. The output of 4 new health initiatives. My understanding is that to develop an initiative, because we are responding to a certain challenge. So if we are saying 4 new health innovation initiatives by, without saying in responding to what, because that's why even my colleagues, I understand their question if they want where and on what and things like that, because we are responding to something else, not just building or not just developing a new health innovation without knowing what is that we're responding. Because I'm not even comfortable with the answer. Let's say, no, you can't respond, we're not sure, but there is something that they're developing. You know why I'm saying that? Because for the other output, I think on slide 27, it's saying slide 30, 15 new businesses without giving us the location, the target group, and things like that. Because why I'm saying that, my practical experience is that one area in Bergville, in KwaZulu-Natal, there is a water standpipe there. But people, they can't use that water because the water is salt. But the standpipe is there. Because it's very important to say, what is it that we want to do? And we're addressing why. Rather than say, no, for the department to respond in terms of their output, they will just create new health-related initiatives without being specific. So it will be very difficult for us to monitor and evaluate this output, the way you've crafted the output. Maybe I'll have time to check also in the corporate strategy to see whether maybe you were specific there, because in the slide you were not specific. The other question, are you foreseeing any challenges in spending all the budget that was allocated to the department? If there are challenges, what are those challenges? Or you intend to continue with your good record in terms of the spending in the department? Because I think we'd appreciate if you continue with your good record. But are you foreseeing any challenges in terms of the spending? Your budget. Thank you, Chair.
I've got a few questions myself, but some of them, which I was supposed to ask, have already been covered by members here. But I just want to start on the question of research, Chair. On our recent oversight, we found a very big outcry that systems are not coordinated, and therefore they are not working together
and as a result, they are actually giving a lot of challenge to the research chair in really making a meaningful impact. This was based on the fact that academic institutions in which most of them are located, they don't look at any other thing in terms of outputs, but they look at the number of publications that they do per year. But this is also not the only challenge to them, but it is also, they said that also NRF, for them to qualify for NRF funding in their research, also NRF, this is what it is, their basic requirement. And as a result, they said, now they develop very important new patents, patentable products, but they can't patent them. They end up being patented elsewhere overseas because they have to match up to the requirements of academia as well as NRF to publish. And once they have published some of these institutions, then they take their publications and use them to patent what they've published. And they said this is a real serious challenge, which the department, because it also controls NRF, must look into, but also coordinate this with the Ministry of Education, higher education, because they said this is a very, very big challenge to make a meaningful product on patent. That's my first question. But there is also a very growing complaint from researchers, very potential researchers in formerly disadvantaged universities, so-called black universities, that by virtue of them being located there, they are discriminated against. The researchers are usually selected from these top universities. And then they were saying that, but also they found that if you are a young researcher, although you have got the meaningful, awards in research, but you'll hardly be made a researcher. And they said the criteria that are used to appoint research chairs have got to be really revisited. This is another observation which I think you must take into consideration. Another clarification that I wanted to get, because I think we did, during oversight, also go through this. What is exactly the difference between standards of excellence and standards of competence? This, I think, might need to be very well clarified, at least for us committee members. TIA. There is a growing concern in TIA that with the amalgamation being thought of or in process or in pipeline, there is a growing concern with some individual, especially managers, that they do not know their role in future with this amalgamation, and even their location, where they would be located. For instance, if I was working in an innovation plant bio in Maritzburg, so with the amalgamation, probably with all the facilities I have there, research and contact, what's going to happen when I'm relocated? Have you thought about those kinds of challenges over the, in this amalgamation? But also, there is something that I did not understand myself, why the TIA, the current TIA CEO, is acting. Why is he acting? Because he was supposed to be simply, if TIA is as is going to be drawing together all these small entities into one conglomerate entity. There should be continuity. Now, if the CEO is going to put together the thing and leave, now the new CEO has got to start a venture because he will not understand why this person put these things in this way he did. I didn't understand why the CEO is acting because it's a new entity. Why is the CEO not being appointed exactly so that he can process this unification of the entities and have some kind of continuity so that they can, this process could be well managed at its initial stage. I don't know. I don't understand why he's acting. And there was a very big excitement about Sumbandila launch, Sumbandila satellite launch. I've never had now any progress except to hear from newspapers. What is the status of Sumbandila as it is now? Then, in your organogram, you have shown the structure, the COO, and the DDGs of various programs. I would have liked that we as a committee, we get some brief brief CVs for the various DDGs, because it seems a very important structure, and we need to know who is there, and although we can't change it, but there's a hope when you know that yes, they put a correct man in this program to because of that, like you see. So I think if you can provide us with a structure, you just become structure, so the COO, the DDGs, whatever, because you have said that you have appointed a new one, I think it's for human capital development. That's a very important one. I would like to know where he is background, if he can do what he thinks he should do. So, right. And you said something about the Finland, ICT program, developing, the economic prospects of Finland through the pulp industry and forest. In case that ends, they have a similar program on ICT for economic development. Have you ever coordinated with them in terms of, because I think that is what they are trying to do, especially in agriculture, to use ICT to coordinate an agricultural economic program, but also in other areas. I think it would be very important, if we have not, to revisit those activities. Because I remember they were actually initiated by the now premier when he was still the minister, the MEC for Economic Development, and I know now that they are really continuing with that program. SANSA, you said SANSA would be operational by 31st March 2013. Well, I saw that was dealt with the space agency and everything. Why is it not operational? Why is it not? What are the challenges now? Why only in 2013? You said that you want to develop a center of excellence in IKS, Indigenous Knowledge Systems, by March 2011. I have a letter here which comes from UWC. They have written to me, they want also to come and present to the committee. They have a program which excited me. They have a program on science and technology, but that is going to be integrated with IKS, which is one of the things that I have been preaching a long time ago, which led to the establishment of the Moscow Institute in Durban. So I would have liked that all of us, from myself in the capacity of Moscow Darling to you at the department, to UWC, to have some joint meeting and discuss this, because it's a very important area of interplay between science and technology in the yes, I can give two demo tools because I wanted to come for the second round. Then.
Some of my questions were related to TI and have been asked by either yourself or Honorable Keith. May I just add them so to answer the TI thing altogether? Okay, thank you. Last year I asked the Minister a question about the appointment of CEO for TI and got a response that this person would be in place by the end of this financial year and that the department was scouting about overseas to try and get South Africans to repatriate, South African scientists to repatriate there. I see according to the strategic report now that this person is going to, or likely to be employed by the 30th of November this year rather than the 30th of this month. I wanted to know what is the delay in appointing this person, and is this perhaps because the profile, the criteria that you're asking for are perhaps too narrow, could perhaps be widened a bit? I want to know why is it taking so long to find this person, because I think we've been looking for about 2 years now. Thank you.
Just to one question which I think does not need a second round. I just wanted to check from the department that in applying services of a private person in terms of the consultant, how long are you going to take that? Is it not going to be expensive? Do you have a time frame of utilizing the services of those people?
Ask the question about what is the department's role in respect of the 10-year innovation plan and the grand challenge of energy. I wasn't quite sure what it does in respect of energy. Might have answered that, but it's not been so quick as I understood.
Over to you, the department.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the colleague, to the members of the committee for the interesting and wide-ranging questions that you're asking, and very important, all of them. Perhaps if I could just first of all talk about the TR-related issues, because there was also a question about the South African National Space Agency. What do you mean by fully operational and so on? Now, I don't know exactly how the individuals that included that as an output in this table, how in their head they defined fully operational. But what I'd like to do is outline that there are different ways in which you can define fully operational. So, I mean, one could take the view that when you have established the board, that's the end of the department's involvement with the establishment of this institution. And you could say, well, as soon as that has happened, you can take that off your list of outputs. But that's perhaps not a very realistic, and it's probably not a very opportune way of approaching this, because the process of setting up an institution, whether it's on a green field or through an amalgamation of pre-existing ones, it takes a significant amount of time. For example, before joining the department, I went through the mergers in the higher education sector, and it can take 5 or 6 or 7 years before the new institution identifies itself as a new institution rather than as some connected whole of a whole lot of smaller institutions. So these processes take their time. For example, in the case of TIA, there were several component institutions that were amalgamated into one. They all had their own individual employment conditions, for example, which were not exactly the same because they were autonomous institutions. So they had different employment conditions. They had different policies applying to their work environment. Harmonizing all of them on paper is probably reasonably easy, but luckily our labor legislation requires substantive consultation with staff and taking staff along on the process of managing that. So that takes some time, and the department cannot simply divorce itself of that responsibility from some oversight and mediation if necessary. Secondly, even once those internal operational, immediate operational policies and procedures and structures have all been put in place, the process of then appointing individuals to those, which is some of the issues that were alluded to by the honourable members and by the chair,
That takes time again as well. Now that's a process that has to be managed largely by the institution and the board and its management structures. But even once the operational structure is in place, then comes the challenge of aligning the strategic activities of the different bodies. So for example, TIA, one of the activities that TIA will need to manage is the provision of financial support in the form of small amounts of venture capital. Inasmuch as that function might not yet have been properly established in any of the precursor institutions, that requires to be established, and it needs to be established in alignment with departmental priorities and imperatives. So the process at which the department can say, we've done what we need to on TIA, and we now no longer have it in our plan or in our outputs, I'm not exactly sure where one would define this. And so what I'm trying to say is the concept of fully operational would probably need to be defined on an ongoing basis. What do we mean? So as far as I am aware, the targets that were set for the implementation of TIA in terms of setting the board, establishing the board, appointing the chair, passing the act, those targets were met. I don't know to what extent the further operationalization appears in detail in individual business program responses. With regard to the question about the CEO, I honestly cannot give a response on this, and I think this is a question which we probably would be best to provide you with a written response on, because this is a responsibility of the board and the chair of that board. I have personally have had absolutely no engagement with that process whatsoever. I very much doubt that the DG personally is involved in this process. So we take note of this, and we will provide written responses to you on this particular matter.
If I could add, and I know I am mindful of time, so I agree that I think you should call the TIA in, because once we create an entity like this, it has a life of its own. It's governed by the statutory body, governed by legislation which you passed not so long ago. So the board has to appoint the CEO. So when you say, why is this person acting? Well, he will be acting until the board appoints a CEO, because we don't appoint a CEO. So we're assisting at the moment. Why it's November, I don't really know. And but the point is that the board had to be appointed, the board had to become functional and operational, and the board will have to interview. So we haven't really been looking for 2 years at all. The board hasn't been in existence for 2 years. The board is now, I'm not sure if they've advertised at this point, but they've got to go through that process of advertising, interviewing, and appointing. So in all likelihood, that takes time. I'm not sure why they set a target of, or said they would do it by the end of March, because the time is putting the interview, giving the opportunity to respond, advertising, interviewing, and giving that person adequate time to give notice and then start the job, which takes you a few months into the future anyway. But I do think that you should engage with the board yourself.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. If I could move on to the question that was also asked by the Honourable Member about what are the geographic distributions of the specific interventions for businesses or so. As I tried to explain earlier on, it is possible that some of them may already have been identified. It is possible some of them still need to be identified. The key question you asked is, well, if you can't identify them, how can you set yourself the target? I think that's the philosophic issue that you were trying to grapple with. And secondly, what would inform your choice of the areas? Well, the choice of the areas would in the first instance, I presume, be informed by the specific needs that are identified in a particular regional or socioeconomic community. And the suitability of science and technology-led interventions to address that specific need. The search for such opportunities and such needs is never-ending, and it's something the department is involved in all the time. And to a large extent, we're very dependent on observations and recommendations and indications from stakeholders outside of the department, including honourable members of the committee, including members of the public, to alert us to specific needs. Many of the examples that Marjorie was talking about and which were in the slides were opportunities that came to the department which we did not perhaps know about until they were brought to our attention. So we do have internal processes that engage with departments, with other government departments and with municipalities and provinces to look at opportunities where we can identify these, but input in this regard from stakeholders is very helpful. So there's a process in which these are identified. They're not simply identified by the department deciding this is where it's going to be. There's a process whereby these opportunities are identified. The Deputy Minister, in fact, has brought many to our attention, things that in his constituency work, for example, opportunities that he identifies there, needs that present useful laboratories for testing the application of science and technology to socioeconomic improvements. The questions posed by the chair of the committee, the research chair, you asked about you presented an argument to say that the research chairs have been established and some of them have been rolled out according to a certain model, a certain expectation of what these research chairs should be doing. And you're quite correct in that observation. And you're also correct, I think, in the suggestion you were making that that model and those expectations should not remain static. They need to vary. They need to vary according to the strategic needs that the research chairs are supposed to fulfill. In the first instance, it was important that the research chairs initiative addressed the fundamental constraint of us simply not having sufficient, highly qualified, dedicated researchers to maintain the basic foundation of our intellectual body. Now that to some extent we've begun servicing that, that project is not yet complete. It is time though to begin to identify what are specific strategic interventions that one would want to make based on that initial foundational intervention. And here the department has begun to conceptualize concepts of engineering chairs and innovation chairs. And the models for these would need to take into account the fundamental need for excellence. There can be no quarreling about that. But in addition to that, apart from measuring that excellence just in terms of the number of students produced and the number of publications in internationally accredited journals, you need to start looking at other impacts, such as capacity development, such as patents, which is a particular example that you innovation type outputs. So these chairs, the modification of the South African Research Chairs Initiative could involve then the incorporation of additional criteria that would allow a more strategic approach to be added to the model that's already in place. So there are discussions going on within the department and in association with the National Research Foundation to explore that. With regard to the coordination with the Department of Higher Education and Training in this respect, the respective ministers of Science, Technology and Higher Education and Training met a couple of weeks ago, and they agreed that the coordination between the two departments is critical to our respective responsibilities. And they've agreed that the DGs would convene an interdepartmental structure on a regular basis that will look at the opportunities for coordinated activities, and there are many. The research chairs is just one of them. The question of bursaries is another. So we've identified on our side already a menu of items where we believe we can improve our respective contributions.
That's just a point. Last week we had a presentation also from the department, the DG was also here. We were discussing discussing exactly these questions cropped up, especially in terms of the retention of the French students into science. That, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, especially those students that come from poor communities, they are unable to, even how excellent they can be at the university, because even getting there is difficult financially. Now, to, for them to remain in research with the type of stipends that the local facilities give is impossible, because they've got to then sustain their family. And so they were saying, the teacher was saying that they, one strategy which has been an experiment was to give a bigger stipend, which allows them to also give some support to families. And he said most of those students have remained in the system. Yeah. And so, and we took upon ourselves that we must have a workshop, therefore, which should involve education, finance, because treasury also, you know, very central into this, and also, of course, any other related committee. And then, most of the department, we can also invite them to be part of us when we do that, and so forth. So, so I think that's a very, it's one of the very important things that we have to look into, innovating our approach to the innovation program.
Thank you, Chair. I'm certain you're right that a more coordinated approach and working together in identifying a commonly defined problem will add a lot of value, and this is a wonderful initiative that you have shared with us. The question of centers of excellence and centers of competence, again, a more detailed presentation could easily be presented to you, but in a nutshell, you can think of the difference between these as, in part, centers of excellence would typically be located more in the upstream end of the innovation chain, fundamental research, strategic research, knowledge production, and applied research. Centers of competence is an instrument and an intervention that we are conceptualizing, or have conceptualized, in fact, specifically to be situated more downstream in the innovation space. So the requirements for centers of competence would already be a significant networking with private sector institutions and bodies that have an interest in that particular area of science and technology. And so that's one way in which one can differentiate them, is in terms of where they're located in the innovation chain, conceptually and strategically. Secondly, in terms of the constituencies, or rather the capacities that they would bring together. Centers of excellence, although it's wonderful, if they do draw already on private sector interests and incorporate them into the work that's happening there, it's not a fundamental requirement or expectation or strategic intervention that's expected of them. Whereas with centers of competence, it is a sine qua non. It is an expectation. That's precisely why they're being conceptualized. So it's in the nature of their activities and in the nature of their partnerships. And then, of course, the expectations of the department in terms of the deliverables of these types of instruments would also be differentiated according to strategically what we're expecting them to do. So in a nutshell, those are the distinctions in our minds in this regard. We've taken note, Chair, of your request for the brief CVs of the DDGs, and we will be providing them. The Sumba Dila SAT launch, I know that the Deputy Minister has a particular interest in our satellite and space technology, and he indicated that he might wish to add something on this. Lastly, the suggestion again that you've made of a discussion, of coordinating a discussion around the concept of a centre of excellence in IKS. I'm sure that my colleagues who are responsible for IKS would welcome a discussion along these lines with you and other stakeholders. Chair, I think apart from Sumadila, I've covered everything, but the Deputy Minister might be able to add further comments to what I've already provided.
I think I've forgotten one on hand. It's going to come with the memory. So.
A general point, Chair, but maybe you could indicate to us when you would like to end this meeting, because that will determine how long one speaks on these issues.
Five minutes.
So I'll give you, Honourable Member, I'll give you the 30-second version. But I think a general comment, because it responds to some of the other questions asked. We're dealing with a corporate strategy, and you know, it's an attempt to highlight some of the things that you can say are measurable, for which you want indicators, for which you set some sort of targets. It's not comprehensive. It doesn't deal with the entire work of the sub-program, and it will never give Honourable Member the kind of detail that you want, because there simply isn't space in the kind of template. But what it does to you is to say, look, you said you were going to introduce X number of new health and innovation initiatives. We want to know from you what you have in mind, and then at a later stage you can say, but one of these initiatives was to be introduced by the end of, by 31st of March 2011, did you do it? But the onus is on you to engage in more detail on these sub-programs where you are interested in more detail. And all of them would require more detail if you like. Some things are very easily measurable. If you say we're going to prepare a report on, let's say, on R&D expenditure, well, that's a report. It's going to come out on such and such a date. But some of them are less easily qualified here or elaborated upon here. So if you're going to say there are going to be X number of papers signed, papers written, you can't possibly list the papers, and we don't even know. So if you say one of these health initiatives will be passed in the year, the outer year, 2012 to 2013, in all likelihood, the sub-program director will not know at this stage what that initiative is going to be. It will be the subject of changing times and the subject of consultation. I think, just very briefly, because there was a lot of interest in health and some of the initiatives that exist. Our main one, what's indicated here, is the so-called SHOP, the HIV/AIDS Prevention and Treatment Initiative, and that was a platform rather. But then we have telemedicine initiative, we have a malaria initiative. Some of the telemedicine work, Honourable Member, is in KZN. So obviously you should just pepper us with questions about when you, because it relates to where you're doing your constituency work, it's useful to have additional information. Don't hesitate to ask us for additional information. On energy specifically, Honourable Member, it's one of those things, because we deal with so many areas. Yes, we've got five grand challenges, but the five grand challenges by no means encompasses all of our work. And I want to touch on one in particular, that is paleontology, which doesn't feature in the corporate strategy at all, and yet there are some very, very exciting things that are happening right now as we speak, and new discoveries, which will be hopefully unveiled in a few weeks from now. And we will seek opportunity with the Portfolio Committee to give you a much more elaborate briefing and probably bring in some of the key researchers to directly engage with the Portfolio Committee in time. But energy is a good example. let's say those five grand challenges, space science and astronomy, our focus is in general on research, development, and innovation. Sometimes that translates into facilities and into big ones like the SALT, the SKA, the Meerkat, etc., and sometimes not. Sometimes you're setting up research institutions and you're supporting the work by way of centers of excellence, approval of various projects, research chairs, etc. Our contribution to the energy debate is mostly an intellectual contribution. So we are not going to decide whether there's going to be a concentrated solar plant in the Northern Cape. Between public enterprises and the Department of Energy, they're going to make those decisions. But we think that we have a very important role to play in influencing some of those decisions through the research and development work that is being done. So SAMERI, for example, the National Energy Research Institute, is largely funded by the Department of Science and Technology. And it was indeed the initiative of the Department of Science and Technology. What we are doing, though, is, and where we can use the European Union funds, the sector support budget, very creatively, is to pilot certain things which we think could find their way into that energy mix. And I would like to say, because I've been delegated this responsibility of renewable energy, that I would really welcome one-on-one discussions from any of you with ideas. Because we can never be in the business of rollouts, mainstream rollouts. But by the middle of the year, there'll be a new integrated resource plan, which we hope will look considerably better than the last one. And we think that the renewable energy targets are quite modest, and we can do a lot better than that. But, you know, I don't have time to go into more detail than that. Very briefly on aquaculture, I mean, on the question of where, well, we know that the Western Cape one, bye-bye, you see I've been too long, and I've lost you. We've already reported the West Coast aquaculture is in a place called Wanderklipbaai. High unemployment there, and I think it's making a sort of a noticeable and visible impact in that area. And it is, in all indications, show that it is sustainable and it could lead to further development and further investment. The other one, the one referred to by Marjorie on the marine cages, the yellow tail, that's in Port Elizabeth. That's in partnership with INJ. But there is also aquaculture. There's aquaculture, these same cages for the trout, they're in KZN as well. But insofar as you want further details on exactly where these projects are located, obviously we can give you detail. I think we should probably do that exercise and take all of our projects that are not virtual projects, that are not centers of excellence necessarily, but are actual projects like the essential oils. We've done that before. We can tell you exactly where all of the essential oil projects are, all of the aquaculture projects are, and anything else that might have relevance to this committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. So it was, no, as there's no time now, unfortunately. So there's no time now. You can just meet with the premier outside.
Okay.
Yeah. And, no, but everybody may have something, but you know, it's almost now, actually it's after one. We agreed on time and we should not worry ourselves. But you can ask the minister, we can discuss with the if members agree that you can continue, it's fine. Yeah, members. Do you want us to continue? So members don't want. Okay. Just to summarize, thank you very much. Actually, some of the questions that have been asked there, as you've said, Deputy Minister, I mean, we still have an annual report where we interrogate if things have happened or not. So we also have a right to also look into the bimonthly reports to the Treasury. So there's a lot of instruments to really go through the strat plans if things that were set here are being implemented during the year. And at the end of the year, how much was implemented, how many were the challenges in detail. So I think we do have those instruments in Parliament. But without waste of time, I'm very sorry that some members are divided. There's one member wants to have questions asked in the public arena, but other members also feel that their time space has been taken. So I think the member will have to discuss with you on a one-to-one basis. He can report two aspects in the committee if it's a matter which is in the committee next time. There's nothing wrong with it. But thank you very much for everything, and I hope that you'll have a good trip back, and it was very useful exercise to have this happen. And I think it was also very important to have the Deputy Minister, who is in continuity with that, because he is able to relate the previous to the present and the future, and at least he has informed